Welcome to the Northbound Wealth Podcast. All opinions expressed by me, my co-hosts, or my guests are solely our own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Northbound Wealth Management. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and is not intended as personalized recommendations or fiduciary advice. It is not intended to provide and should not be relied upon for any investment, accounting, legal, and tax advice or as a solicitation to offer or buy any securities. Clients of Northbound Wealth Management may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast. Hello, everyone. This is March 13th. This is the Northbound Wealth Podcast with your host, Brent Foster, weekly market insights. Markets take a breather after a mixed week. That would be last week and this week. Stocks were down for the week as investors appeared to take some profits and traders parsed Fed Chair Jerome Powell's congressional testimony. The markets kind of were off to a rough start to the week with the Dow and the S&P and the NASDAQ each off more than 1% on Tuesday alone. Mega cap tech stocks were under pressure as investors appeared to take some profits. Markets clawed back much of their losses on Wednesday and Thursday with Fed Chairs Powell's upbeat comments to the Senate Banking Committee's boosting stocks. Chair Powell said that once the Fed was confident inflation was tracking sustainably at 2%, the Fed would consider cutting short-term interest rates. The S&P 500 and NASDAQ rallied with the S&P hitting a record close. So Friday's employment news threw some uncertainty in the mix. The economy added 275,000 jobs in February, exceeding the 198,000 expected, but wage growth slowed. Jobless claims edged up. Some investors saw that as negative, while others viewed it as a Goldilocks moment, an economy that is not too hot or too cold. Stocks initially rallied on the news, but profit takers appeared to arrive as the days progressed. So on Y charts, if you go to my blog, you'll see some of the major index returns. I've got weekly market insights on there. And we've got the five-day trailing rate of change, one-month trailing return, year-to-date trailing return, and then the one-year trailing return. And so I like to go through those. Dow Jones Industrial Average for the year is up 3.21%. MSCI EAFE is up 5.82%. The NASDAQ is up 7.31%. The S&P 500 is up 7.73%. The S&P 500 is the one that we track most and quote the most and is most widely accepted as kind of the broader index on the health of the U.S. Stock market and the economy. In the bond market, the 10-year Treasury note, if we review that, the latest value is 4.09%. The one-month change, that means it's down about 1.45%. So rates have backed up a little bit. Three-month change would be down about 3.31% to close out at 4.23%. And then the one-year change is up 2.76 or 276 basis points. So a year ago, the 10-year note was at 3.98%. Now, like I said, it's at 4.09%. And the source again was Y Charts. Thanks, Y Charts, for providing that data and insight for Northbound Wealth Management to post on its website, as well as talk about on the podcast. FedWatch, productivity. Productivity is one of the critical data points the Fed reviews to determine its next steps with monetary policy. Producing more goods or services with fewer resources helps the economy grow while managing inflation risks. The 3.2% productivity gains in the fourth quarter reported last week were mainly attributed to post-pandemic repair of supply chains. However, investors may hope that artificial intelligence will play a more significant role in productivity increases. So this week, key economic data, Tuesday, consumer price index, Treasury statement, given that Tuesday already happened, well, the inflation print was hotter than expected. A lot of the talk on the street is about how the Fed's going to keep rates higher for longer, and we'll see how that that plays out. Jamie Dimon came out the other day and said, well, we shouldn't be in a rush to lower rates, and the market's got to adjust and price in what that means. And so everybody's trying to interpret the rate of rate cuts, the pace of that over the next year or two. All right. So Wednesday, EIA petroleum status report. Thursday, jobless claims, producer price index, retail sales, business inventories. Friday, industrial production, import and export prices, and consumer sentiment. All right. So notable companies reporting earnings this week: Tuesday, Lennar; Wednesday, Dollar Tree; Thursday, Oracle; Adobe; Dick's Sporting Goods; and Getty Images Holdings. So I don't always see that one in there as a top one, but interesting. All right. Tax tip of the week. Do you know the difference between taxable and non-taxable income? All income you receive is taxable unless the rules explicitly state it isn't. Funny how that is. According to the IRS, taxable income includes earned income like wages and any income earned by bartering through the exchange of property or services. Rental income is taxable, as are other unearned incomes like interest rates and dividends or Social Security. Some income is only taxable if certain conditions are met. For example, life insurance proceeds are usually not taxable to the beneficiary unless you redeem a life insurance policy for cash. Any amount you receive above the cost of the policy is then taxable. State and local income tax refunds may be taxable and should be reported on your federal taxes. Some forms of income are usually not taxable, such as the following: gifts and inheritances, child support payments, welfare benefits, damage awards for physical injury or sickness, cash rebates from a dealer or manufacturer for an item you buy, and reimbursements for qualified adoption expenses. Several factors will affect the cost and availability of life insurance, including age, health, and the type of an amount of insurance purchased. Life insurance policies have expenses, including mortality and other charges. If a policy is surrendered prematurely, the policyholder may also pay surrender charges and have income tax implications. You should consider determining whether you are insurable before implementing a strategy involving life insurance. Any guarantees associated with a policy are dependent on the ability of the issuing insurance company to continue making claim payments. And again, this article is for informational purposes only and should not replace real life advice. So consult your tax, legal, and accounting professionals before modifying your tax strategy. And this tip was adapted from IRS.gov. It's a good one to bookmark, IRS.gov. All right, on to the next segment. We have a good show for you this week. Hello, everyone. This is a piece about the Secure Act 2.0. It includes new provisions on special needs trusts, posted out on the blog on March 12th. That would be yesterday. Experts estimate that there are more than 44 million people with disabilities in the U.S., representing 13.4% of the U.S. population. Many parents of children with disabilities choose to establish a special needs trust. This can help provide financial support for the child long after the parent or guardian has passed away. The passage of the Secure Act in 2019 added complexity to how these types of trusts could be set up, resulting in some limitations regarding how they could be used as long-term financial solutions. However, the Secure 2.0 Act included a modification to help rectify this situation. After all, you know, it's hard to get the tax code right the first time around. You often have to have adjustments. It's important to remember that using a trust involves a complex set of tax rules and regulations. When we help clients who are interested in a trust, we work with professionals who are familiar with the emerging rules and regulations. So let's take a look at the Secure Act. The Secure Act was hailed as the most substantial retirement legislation passed over in a decade. It contained important changes to individual retirement accounts and other qualified accounts intended to help investors save more and be better prepared for the future. Some of the more popular provisions of the Act raised the required minimum distribution age, allowed first-time parents to take penalty-free withdrawals from their retirement accounts in certain instances, and removed the age limit for traditional IRA contributions if you have earned income. The Secure Act also made significant changes to inherited IRAs by requiring beneficiaries to draw down their inherited IRA within 10 years after the IRA creator's death. Lawmakers carved out exceptions to this rule for beneficiaries who are spouses, are minor children, or are experiencing disabilities. It's important to note that Once you reach the age of 73, you must begin taking required minimum distributions from traditional IRA in most circumstances. Withdrawals from traditional IRAs are taxed as ordinary income and, if taken before the age of 59 and a half, may be subject to a 10% federal income tax penalty. The Secure 2.0, although much of the Secure Act was well received, some unintended consequences and missed opportunities needed addressing. The Secure Act 2.0 Act was signed December 29, 2022, and included 92 new modified or clarified provisions to the original. One of these changes pertained to special needs trusts. So charities are now allowed to be remainder men of a special needs trust. Secure 2.0 resolved an issue with the Secure Act that clarified that in the case of a special needs trust established for a beneficiary with a disability, the trust may provide for a charitable organization as the remaining beneficiary without triggering the truncated payout period. This change offered a welcome, though limited, enhancement to special needs trusts designed to receive retirement benefits and qualify as see-through trusts under the Secure Act provision for applicable multi-beneficiary trusts, or AMBTs. Although this provision allowed most charities to be named as remainder beneficiaries after the death of a disabled or chronically ill beneficiary without disqualifying that initial disabled beneficiary from stretching the IRA over their lifetime, grantors must be careful to avoid naming disqualified charities such as private foundations as the remainder beneficiary. So, special needs trusts that allows a disabled or chronically ill person to receive income without reducing their eligibility for the public assistance disability benefits provided by Social Security, Supplemental Security Income, or Medicaid. A grantor, such as a parent or guardian, creates a special needs trust and appoints a trustee to oversee the disbursement of assets from the trust to the disabled beneficiary. The trust is designed to supplement the beneficiary's government benefits but not replace them. A special needs trust is one strategy for those who want to help someone in need. The trust seeks to manage the risk that that person will lose their eligibility for government programs that require income or assets to remain below certain limits. Many grantors will set up a special needs trust that names a charity as the remaining beneficiary in the event the original beneficiary dies before the funds are depleted. Secure 2.0 now allows that practice to continue. If you're currently caring for a child experiencing disability or know someone who is, one consideration may be a special needs trust. As financial professionals, we can provide some insights into how a trust works, and we can help you access more information that addresses specific needs. We also can help explain your financial situation if you choose to start working with an attorney to create a special needs trust. It's never too early to start a conversation on how your loved ones, especially those experiencing disabilities, can benefit from your care and financial legacy. Whether you're a current client or considering working with a financial professional, please don't hesitate to reach out to us here at Northbound Wealth Management. All right, on to the next segment. This segment is about healthcare costs and retirement. In a 2023 survey, 37% of all workers reported that they were either not too or not at all confident that they would have enough money to pay for their medical expenses in retirement. Regardless of your confidence, however, being aware of potential healthcare costs during retirement may allow you to understand what you can pay for and what you can't. So let's break it down. Here's the healthcare breakdown. A retired household faces three types of healthcare expenses. Number one, the premiums for Medicare Part B, which covers physician and outpatient services, and Part D, which covers drug-related expenses. Typically, Part B and Part D are taken out of a person's Social Security check before it is mailed. So the premium cost is often overlooked by retirement-minded individuals. Number two, co-payments related to Medicare-covered services that are not paid by Medicare supplement insurance plans, also known as Medigap, or other health insurance. Number three, costs associated with dental care, eyeglasses, hearing aids, which are typically not covered by Medicare or other insurance programs. It all adds up. According to one study, the average 65-year-old couple can expect to need about $315,000 saved to cover healthcare expenses in retirement. Should you expect to pay this amount? Possibly. Seeing the results of one study may help you make some critical decisions when creating a strategy for retirement. Without a solid approach, though, healthcare expenses may add up quickly and alter your retirement spending. Prepared for the future, guys. Workers are asked how much they have saved and invested for retirement, excluding their residence and defined benefit plans. Source, website, www.ebri.org. 2023 and investopedia.com as of October 23rd, 2023. And again, this content is developed from sources believed to be providing accurate information. And this is not tax or legal advice. Please seek a financial professional for more specifics about your unique situation. On to the next segment. Hey everybody, love is in the air, but are you letting money stress get in the way? Get this, according to a study by the AICPA, 73% of married or cohabitating Americans experience relationship tension due to financial decisions. Here are five common points of financial friction. Do any of these sound familiar? Number one, financial infidelity. A National Endowment for Financial Education poll revealed that 39% of respondents have hidden financial information from their partners and 21% have lied about finances. That's crazy. Number two, divergent financial goals. Couples may be at odds over decisions like owning a vacation property or engaging in expensive hobbies. Number three, lack of open communication. If one partner makes most significant financial decisions, the other may feel unempowered and unheard. That's a problem, obviously, especially if you're married. Number four, incompatible spending habits. Different attitudes towards spending can lead to disagreements and resentment. Number five, income disparity. When one partner earns more, this can cause tension, feelings of inferiority, or an imbalance of power. Relationships require constant effort and open communication. Don't let lousy money communication habits get in the way of happy and healthy relationships. You heard it here. Northbound Wealth Management, we're here to help. Financial counseling. Give us a call at 317-399-1107. On to the next segment. This segment is called Women and Wealth, the Pivot Towards Retirement. Retirement is a significant transition. It can bring both challenges and opportunities for women who have spent many years focused on their careers. For women approaching retirement age, it is crucial to consider various tips and strategies to ensure a smooth and fulfilling transition. An elegant pivot from work life to a life of one's own requires careful consideration. A woman retiring at 65 may live another two decades or more. That's not only a long time to finance, it's also a long time to figure out how to fulfill your life with meaningful activities. Retirement can change a woman's identity, especially those who have worked in the same profession for many years. Exploring new interests and finding a new sense of purpose could involve taking on a new job title, pursuing a passion, or simply embracing new hobbies or activities. But you'll enjoy your retirement more if you start thinking about establishing the new you independent of your career. One of the first steps to take when preparing for retirement is to address financial matters. This includes reviewing your estate strategy, getting all necessary documents in order, and having contingency plans in place for the emergencies and the unexpected. Consider meeting with a financial professional before and after retiring to help establish that the appropriate steps are being taken. For women concerned about their savings or Social Security benefits, considering part-time work, working from home, or starting a small business can provide income and social interaction. You have the choice here to ease into retirement while keeping active and staying engaged. The Department of Labor says that women are more likely to work part-time in retirement. Many part-time jobs may not have retirement plans, making it necessary to plan accordingly. Another option for women is volunteering. Many miss the engagement and challenge of the workforce, and volunteering allows them to dedicate their time to helping others while gaining personal fulfillment. Volunteering can be a way to stay connected to the community while making a difference. Now that you have the time, why not try something new? Taking classes is always a good way for women to continue learning and growing in retirement. Many courses covering various topics are available online or in person, allowing you to explore new interests and stay mentally active. Focusing on your health, too, is one of those things. Beyond addressing financial matters and finding ways to stay engaged, women must prioritize their health and retirement, just like men, just like everyone should. This includes eating a balanced diet, exercising regularly, and getting the right amount of sleep. But your overall health includes more than just your physical body. Social engagement is also essential for happiness and health. Even for natural homebodies, spending time with others can have a positive impact. It's essential to remember that adjusting to retirement takes time. Transitioning into retirement can be a significant change for women who have dedicated many of their years to their careers or their families. However, with careful preparation and consideration, women can make the most of this new phase of life by addressing financial matters, finding ways to stay engaged, prioritizing health, and exploring new interests. Women can embrace retirement as a new beginning and enjoy fulfilling and rewarding experience. It is normal to experience a range of emotions after retirement, but these feelings will likely change over time. Being patient with yourself and understanding that it is a process may help alleviate frustration. So, if you have any questions about this whole thing, about retirement and or getting engaged in the financial conversation, and you're a woman, Northbound Wealth is here to help you kind of guide you through that process. You can give us a call at 317-399-1107. Leave us a message and we'll call you back. All right. I hope you guys had a wonderful week, and please have a great weekend ahead. Until next time, this is Northbound Wealth signing off. Your host, Brent Foster. Talk to you next week.